to the 22nd annual
Most Extreme
Christmas Day
Podcast.
With your hosts from Walt Disney World in Florida.
I'm Alejandro Joaquin.
And I'm Brett Ellison.
And special host from Disneyland in California, Ryan Seacrest.
My name is Ryan Seacrest.
And now, here are Regis Philbin and Kelly Ripa.
Wow, that Brian Setzer Orchestra, just fantastic, and what a great way to welcome in Christmas 2005. Happy holidays, everybody.
All aboard the MXP Podcast Express, the holiday train line that gives you nothing but Christmas cheer and Uncanny Valley special effects from 2000s pop culture.
Ow, my voice, jeez. Okay, it's late. We've been recording already. We're getting there.
You missed your name, Brett. You didn't say it.
Oh, hi. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Most Extreme Podcast. The ho, ho, ho. And Merry Christmas to all.
It's a holiday. I'm Alejandro Joaquin, too. Formatted episode we have today.
No, we're checking a chill. It's me, the Ebenezer Scrooge of this podcast, Brett Ellison. I'm not a Christmas fan, okay? I'm getting it out now. I think it's too commercial. I think it's not that great. I like the decorations at the mall.
To all that stuff, Brett.
No, my favorite is Halloween. I like Halloween the most, but I think it might just be. It's a definitely personal preference. I love my family, and I love the time of the year. I like being able to not do anything on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about Christmas. I know you're a Christmas fan.
Yeah, I mean, we usually celebrate like Christmas Eve. And then,
same.
Yeah, and then the day after Christmas Day, it's like the calmest day. We eat leftovers from the night before, you know, usually spend time with family.
Watch a movie,
something like that.
Do you have any other big traditions?
I remember, like, back in Mexico, we used to, like, have this whole thing that we would go through with the baby Jesus. It was the kind of traditional stuff, and we would like have to put the baby to sleep. Like, we would have this like little fake baby.
Everyone got a baby.
The baby Jesus individually. You know? We had to sing to the baby Jesus.
We found, is your baby named Jesus? All right, come here.
We just find somebody named Jesus and make them the
I've got a friend named Jesse. Yeah, you can use him, I guess.
close enough. We'll take it.
Okay. Yeah, our family always does shrimp for dinner on the. I know a lot of people do like Chinese food
for Christmas.
If you've got any, yeah. Oh, have I told? I told this before on our last holiday special, but I have a friend from Norway. His family's tradition for Christmas every year is to watch 28 Days Later.
Interesting.
Which is like
interesting
the, what?
Choice.
That's the most not. I was like, that is the last movie I would have guessed. You guys were like, bundle up with the blankets under the fireplace. Guess what we're watching
tonight? We're watching Tenet. Yes.
Would be my Christmas. We're going to invert ourselves and have a great time. Well, we are talking about a movie, of course. We're talking about more of a phenomenon, really. Which Alejandro, you wanted to talk about. We're talking the Polar Express.
Yes.
So, okay, I have to ask, why are we doing this?
Because I think that, like, you know, this whole podcast, we talk a lot about just re-examining things from our past. And Polar Express, for a long time, was this movie that I really liked, as a kid. I really loved the music in it, I remember. Which I still think the music is actually pretty good, like the main theme. Yeah, and I remember liking it a lot as a kid. But a lot of people have talked about how bad it is. And I knew that it was bad, I guess, because I kind of just are like, oh yeah, it was probably bad. I don't know. But I just kind of wanted to re-examine it for myself and make another choice and see what I thought about it now.
So is this one of your favorite Christmas movies?
This was like, I have a list of Christmas movies that I try to see.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, Charlie Brown Christmas Special is on there. A classic.
That's probably my favorite.
You know, probably the best one made. I try to watch that one at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely more when I was a kid, I would have my little list of movies or whatever. Polar Express, though, I never really saw it, like, that much, too. Like, I remember liking it, but, like, I didn't own it. It wasn't on anywhere. And it, I only really would want to see it during Christmas time, so I didn't really feel like buying it. So now, like, getting a chance to see it over again, it's on HBO now, so it's a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about Charlie Brown, a lot of that stuff is on Apple TV now. Get on the mother
train.
Yes. Yeah, just we need a Polar Express and Sopranos, like, combination.
That's right.
Yeah,
I got the James Gandolfini version. I don't know which one you got with the Tom Hanks going on.
Oh, yes. But what about you, Brett? What do you think about this movie, and how do you proceed?
I'm going to my place. So I definitely saw this. I think the first time I saw this movie was through DVD Netflix in the mail.
Yeah. That's an oldie.
I believe I watched it. Yeah. I think I need to look through my cabinet somewhere in my house and see if we still have any of those slips anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I think I still have the installation DVD of the Netflix app. For the
classic.
PS2,
I think those go on.
PS3.
I think I have that somewhere too. That is
a relic for sure.
I look on eBay; it's probably worth something. I saw this multiple times as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't like it as a child. Not a good sign when that's mm-hmm. your target audience.
Yes,
and haven't liked it since. And so I would probably honestly say this might be one of my least favorite. That's kind of harsh to say. There's such things of like, I have a lot of friends who love this movie, and I don't understand why. When I looked on Google reviews today, I was just like, everyone's like, wow, my all-time favorite Christmas movie. I love this film. And I'm just completely, it's very,
and
are we talking about the same
are
thing?
Are they like people that like have seen it over... like would see it a lot?
Yeah, it's like people who were like, oh, this is their favorite. And then it always came on like the 25 Days of Christmas on ABC Family.
Mm-hmm.
Who listen to the...
Yeah, I remember that.
The Wizarding... Mm-hmm. Our Wizards... the Wizarding World.
Wizards.
The Wizards of Waverly Place episode, the Kids Meal Corner Drop, is definitely a bit to that. for those who don't know, Kids Meal Corner is... dude, did I say it? Oh, crap.
Oh, man.
Just kidding.
There's something, but it's not really Kids Meal.
There's a lot of Polar Express merchandise and food and experiences. Yeah, you can experience the magic for yourself. I have a family, good family friends, and they got the DVD
mm-hmm.
from Walmart in like the $5 bin.
Mm-hmm.
They watched it all as a family. The movie's over. They ejected the disc and then they threw it in the trash.
Oh wow!
Like that's how much they hate this movie.
No,
I think
and no hesitation.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about why I hate this movie so much. Which is honestly just this is it's so cheesy, and it's so cheesy without a message. Very much is not to. There's a great one of my favorite podcasts, Blank Check with Griffin and David, did a whole episode about this. But they're very much just talking about like the whole. This whole movie is just about like the whole commercialization of Christmas and about like believe why, because you'll get presents. Like why? Well, because you want to believe in something. And it's like that, what? Like there's no like substance to what I'm believing or what the Christmas spirit is about other than toys.
Right.
And I hate that. Even as a kid, I was like, well, there's nothing to this.
Yeah. I like rewatching it. I think like my verdict is kind of that, it's like probably the book was good and
the book is beautiful.
Yeah. I haven't read the book. Now I want to read the book because I feel like
it's really cool.
I feel like the book is how I imagine how I saw the movie when I was a kid, if that makes sense.
Oh, sure.
So I think that I would probably like the book, but yeah, watching the movie again, I was actually surprised like the storyline. Cause I remembered it. I didn't really remember it. Right. But watching it again, I was like, oh, there is no storyline. Like there is, but it's just very aimless in a way. And you can see like the book, like parts that are obviously not in the book are like the worst parts.
Well, yeah. If you've read the book, you're like, wait, how do you make a movie out of this?
Yes.
It's very much like they get on a train and they go to the North Pole.
Yeah, it's kind of like this fairy tale, like folktale thing, like just a story about a boy in Christmas. You know, like not very like this big epic Christmas thing. You know, not Christmas Carol. I think that I don't know if that was their problem, that they thought of it as like the next Christmas Carol or something like that, which I guess it kind of became, but
yeah, it definitely did later.
Yeah. but yeah, just not as nuanced as I thought. Yeah. The very simple stuff. He gets on the train, he gets lost. Don't even get me. We'll talk about it. The ticket stuff and everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Well, I didn't know if you knew this, but Chris Van Allsburg, the writer and illustrator for the book of The Polar Express. Oh, did he illustrate it? I can't remember, but he wrote it. Also a writer of Jumanji, the book Jumanji.
Yeah,
and
I saw that.
And Zathura.
Oh, wow. I did not know less.
Which I knew. I think I might have read both of them when I was a kid, that like, well, they're so similar. Like, one's in the jungle and one's in space, but it's a board game that traps children. And then not knowing that he also did the Polar Express, but they also have that same very like stylized kind of look to them in the book. But yeah, I very different. It's kind of like, this is also from Griffin Newman was talking about this. It's like, if you read the book Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, you're like, wait, how did they make a movie out of this? You know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of to add a bunch of stuff. But it feels like everything they added here is really just kind of to show off the technology, not really to tell a story.
It's very like, there's a lot of set pieces, very specific set pieces that you can see why they chose that to maximize, the kind of what they're trying to do with the technology. Which I guess I appreciate, but I think it is overused a lot. And like, I like the scene where the ticket goes flying and you kind of see that. It's kind of cool. But then there's, you know, like other shots, and scenes that with the train going out of track or, you know, where nothing's really happening story wise and it's really just, like this big action set piece just put there.
That's my big note watching this again, which is this whole thing feels like a tech demo that they're trying to show off to exhibitors and studios to be like, see what we can do with this technology. Specifically the one shot scene of the ticket flying out of the train, going through like the snow to a pack of wolves, then flying off of like an eagle into a bird's nest, then flying. It's like,
and then it becomes a giant snowball.
Right.
And ends up snowball, back inside the tree.
Right. And you're like, so this is just here to show off what you can do with the technology. And that's fine. But it's like so basically the big reason we're talking about this movie is because it was the first all digital capture film. Where it was acted, all the parts were acted in digital character, the environments were digital, all the camera work was done digital. It was so big, especially around this time, to have that being done, because you can understand why that would be like a very cool, because a filmmaker, you want to be able to have control over the environments to some extent, you know.
Right.
And to be able to completely do a digital world and like characters and everything, you have such control over the lighting. You have such control over how the actors look at everything. However, I feel like the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, this feels like a PS2 cutscene. Like, also, it does not feel real at all.
Also, the fact that Tom Hanks plays, I think, basically all the male characters, except for some of the other kids. But yeah, just like, I guess they did that to show that they could do that. I don't really see like a point on Tom Hanks like being everybody. I mean, I do like Tom Hanks, so I don't mind that.
Yeah, no, I love Tom Hanks.
Yeah, it's just funny seeing Tom Hanks like scrouch down to be the level of a little kid.
That was the thing that I didn't even know until watching this this time, is that he's also Hero Boy, the main character. Is that I was like, oh, I thought it was just somebody else, but yeah, I mean, he's not doing the voice.
Yeah.
The voice is done by, now 3 episodes in a row we've had the same actor, Daryl Sabara.
We just need to bring
Mr.
him
Megan
in real life.
We do need to bring him in real life because he is, he's in a lot of things we've talked about.
He was busy during this era. He was busy.
Yes. December on Most Extreme Podcast is now Daryl Sabara month. Yes. Everything he does, we're touching. So very much that. And also, was it Josh Hutcherson who did some of the motion capture too?
Yeah, he was kind of the stand-in, I guess, for whenever they needed Tom Hanks to be the conductor and stuff like that.
Now that's the thing that I'm like, oh, that could be cool. What you could do with this technology is like, oh, you can have, you know, one actor play everybody. You could have one actor play multiple different parts, and you can do it in such a way where they look different, they feel different, all this stuff. But it doesn't, like, at least in this movie, it does not feel that way.
I think, that was a little bit more successful in the Christmas Carol movie because
The Jim Carrey.
Just because Jim Carrey is a performer without CGI could play, like, a billion characters, you know?
Right.
So he kind of, like, is a little bit better adaptive for that. And even with all his like facial features that he's very famously known for. However, that film was also like, I don't know why both of them are very dark Christmas movies.
You know, that one is specifically crazy.
That one
dark.
Gets
like, really
dark.
Scary.
Yeah.
And the book does too. I mean, the novel is very scary, but it feels like they went all in on the scary stuff. Like,
just
that's
straight up
a horror movie.
Like, scenes. And, like, I mean, the whole movie really is not, like, a positive movie until the end.
No. It's one of those that you're watching out and you'll go, how in the world did Walt Disney Pictures make this movie?
Yeah.
You'll be like, there's no way they would make it. I dare them to make something that scary as that. But yeah, very much that, but now it just feels like, and especially even in that film till this day, I've been like, it feels so lifeless. Like it feels like animatronics or something like with these like digital, like motion capture pieces of work.
Like you pause, like I practiced it. I would just pause frames of this movie and just look at the character's eyes and it just is not right. Something not, there's just no direction in the eyes. And it's just hard because humans do so many movements without thinking about it, and animating that or trying to capture that is, and especially back then, was so hard.
But we've talked about this tech of technology before because on our Avatar episode with Alicia Stella, hi Alicia, we're talking about that, like that ability to create digital capture worlds is something that James Cameron was trying to do with Avatar from like the 90s. He was like, I want to be able to get this, but the technology's not there yet. And he keeps seeing it progress and progress and progress. And then he was like, it's still not there. It's still not there. It's still not there. I need to be ready for Avatar. And Robert Zemeckis is like, no, it's ready. Like, we'll go ahead.
Just jumps in. Yeah. Well,
right. I mean, and I think Robert Zemeckis makes good movies.
Yeah. We needed someone to step in, I think. Kind of like The Irishman, where Scorsese used the multi-camera approach and the de-aging technology, the new one, where it's like, yeah, it looks weird, but I think someone has to do it first so that we can keep improving on it, you know?
Right. And there's been some good examples of the de-aging technology that's done pretty well. Like Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel is like really good.
For most of the Marvel movies, they've kind of really perfected that because they have so many scenes of younger characters or older characters.
I will say, I like Robert Zemeckis as a filmmaker a lot. I think, you know, we both have talked about how much Back to the Future is like one of the best. I honestly would say my favorite character of any film will probably be Doc Brown. Like, I love that character. I love the world of the Back to the Future stuff. And even like Forrest Gump is good, and Castaway I love. But it really just sort of in the 2000s, he just was all in on like, we got to make everything a motion capture only film. It's kind of sad.
Yeah. He went on to do what? Like a bunch of like, just, motion capture stuff, I think.
So the ones he directs are this one. So he directs three. He directs this one. He directs Beowulf, which is like a PG-13 R-rated. It's like all motion capture. It's Angelina Jolie's in it, but she's like naked. Ooh, but like her, like, you never see anything. Like, it always is like, you know, like a branch or something comes right in front of her boobs or something. So it's always like, oh, what those guys teaching babies. And then he directs A Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey, which I have not seen. I've only seen clips of it where people are like, look how scary this movie is. I almost saw it in IMAX 3D as a child, and I am so glad we didn't. I think my parents looked at the reviews, and they're like, oh, we're not taking our kids to see this.
Yeah, I remember wanting to see it, but I never got the chance to. But I'm so glad I watched it on my TV instead.
Yeah. So Robert Zemeckis' company, Image Movers, is the one that this is production studio, and he kind of became Image Movers Digital, where they kind of became a production company, sort of like, I don't know if you know Weta, who did all the special effects for like Gollum in like Lord of the Rings. And I would argue that that is the best example of motion capture probably ever is Gollum, because it feels, and it was like one of the first to ever do it. Fully motion capture performance in a live action movie. It feels super, super real. That and go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say the two that stand out to me is like the best version of a digital performance in a live action film are Gollum and Davy Jones in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, right. I see.
That feels like, that's a real thing.
Have you seen the Planet of the Apes movies too?
That was the other thing I was going to mention.
Yeah, with, those Andy Serkis. I think have really great motion capturing too, and just the whole theory of just becoming like the motion and then adding everything in post, rather than, you know, Kubrick just putting them in monkey suits and putting them in the hot sun.
Right, but I would even argue that, like, Davy Jones and that and those and like even Caesar in those movies are like even better than Thanos. It's better than any of the stuff that Marvel does.
Yeah,
or like,
I think so.
And it's like, because it might be because those were shot on live action locations, and then they added the motion capture in rather than like a blue screen and then a motion capture person on top of it, and then, or even in this movie like Polar Express, where like even the entire environments are done that way.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool that they would have them be on set and then have to do all the stunt stuff too.
But I mean, like, video games do the same thing, where it's like, you know, all the Last of Us and the Red Dead games, like, are all done where it's like, we just got all the actors in a studio with motion capture and we did it and it works. But maybe that's just because we just kind of expect it to not be that great. But I mean, they look better than this movie.
Yeah, well, also, like, the way that they treated it in that is like they were like doing a play almost, because they even did a Last of Us like real like kind of showing with the real actors, the voice actors,
with Ashley Johnson and Troy Baker. Yeah, that's right,
which was great, and you get to see how real they were with the character. Like, they basically are the character, and nothing like needs to be added. Whereas like in this, it's like Tom Hanks needs to be five different characters, and he's like different ages, and, you know, just trying to do a lot like at the beginning.
Right. And so Zemeckis' company, Image Movers, kind of became that company and was trying to get the whole motion capture up to running, because we'll talk about it. It's coming up, but the Polar Express was a huge success, and I think a lot of people were kind of surprised by it. But yeah, so the movies that they start with, so they do The Polar Express, and then right after that they do a movie that we should definitely talk about, Monster House.
Yes. For me,
terrifying.
It's what was like one of my first nightmares as a kid, I think I remember. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Someone put it on, and I like didn't know what it was, and then the movie started, and I was not ready for what was going to happen. I remember having a lot of distinct memories of not liking that movie.
I didn't watch until a lot later in life, and I really liked it, but it's still like that motion capture stuff is terrifying.
I haven't seen it since, but I heard that the story is like pretty decent.
Or written by Dan Harmon of Community and Rick and Morty. Yeah.
Interesting. Then I will definitely check it out because I'm a big fan of him.
It also is the most 2000s cast ever. You'll look through it and you're like, Napoleon Dynamite, Kevin James, Nick Cannon, all these people. It's so funny. Okay, so then after the Master House, they make Beowulf, which I haven't seen. I don't really want to. I've heard it's definitely better than any of the other ones they've made, but I'm still like, I read that so much in high school.
Now that you mention it, like, I don't think I've actually even heard of this before. Because I don't remember this movie at all. But it looks like so... I don't know.
I didn't really remember seeing going to the movie theater and they would have like trailers being played in the lobby on mute. And I kept seeing because Angelina Jolie plays like a sexy, like bad character. I can't remember. I just kept remember seeing like her naked butt and then like a tail like going past it. So you couldn't actually see anything. And me as a kid being like, whoa. Anyways, moving on, then they make A Christmas Carol, which also makes money, but nobody likes it. And then the big one that they make is, do you know about Mars Needs Moms? You remember Mars Needs Moms? Yeah,
I remember that movie.
Have you seen it?
I watched it, like, really randomly. I remember this was back in the days of Redbox, so I just rented it randomly from Redbox, and I watched the movie, and... I did not remember anything that happened right after it ended.
I kind of want to do a hate watch and watch Mars Needs Moms. Yeah. I haven't seen it. Maybe it's good.
Oh, what's his name? One of the Ninja Turtles voices the act. Seth Green, is that his name?
Oh, yeah, Seth Green.
Voices the kid, yes.
I hate Seth Green. Yeah, so by January of 2011, after the movie production of Mars Needs Moms was completed, for resulting in a layoff of approximately 450 employees at Image Movers, Walt Disney Studios president Alan Bergman said, "Given today's economic realities, we need to find alternative ways to bring creative content to audiences, and IMD no longer fits our business model." So basically what he said is, this was such a disaster, and I believe that is the biggest flop to ever happen in all of Disney history is Mars Needs Moms.
I think I might. I think I remember someone telling me something like that.
And it's weird because they were trying to make a bunch of movies that all got canceled. So one of them, we were doing the Nutcracker, because I guess they were something about Christmas movies for them. Something called Calling All Robots, which I've never heard. They were trying to use this technology to do a Roger Rabbit sequel, which is another example of a movie where I think and Back to the Future is another example of that too, where I feel like, Zemeckis is ahead of its curve with, like, you know, the 2D mixed with live action.
Yeah.
That blew my mind as a kid watching Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Also scared me to death.
And the fact that you have both the Warner Brothers and Disney in the same frame.
That's I think the reason I watched it, because I remember I was such a cartoon kid, I still am, and then my dad told me, you know, there's a movie where like Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse are in the same film, and I was like, what? Like, that could never be made today. And I was like, that's insane. And I watched it and I was did not get it as a kid, and just remember being really creeped out by Judge Doom, the villain in the movie.
Oh yeah, because that one scene
where he like dies and comes back and he's like all like a demon. Yeah. I was like, oh, as a kid, yeah. I think I like was too freaked
that
out.
That is
by
scary.
It.
Yes.
So then now I love it. I think it's a great movie. So then they were also trying to make. We've talked about it before on here. The Yellow Submarine movie.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to do with this technology a remake of the Yellow Submarine movie. With all motion capture, they shot like a decent amount of it, and the test footage is online, and it is the scariest thing you have ever. If you thought Yellow Submarine was already creepy enough, imagine it in IMAX 3D with all motion capture actors. I'll send it to you because I know you're a big Beatles fan, but man,
I'm trying to find it. It's
I'll send it to you. It's pretty hard to find, but it was like you'll be like, oh no, this is not going to work.
See that. Oh my God.
But it's also one of those movies that you're like, I kind of wish it was still made.
just because so that we have something to like really just have as a cultural icon.
Right. Have you watched Get Back yet? The Beatles Get Back?
I have not, but I really want to
get into it. That's your movie, man.
Yes, yes. I'm a bad Beatles fan.
It's literally, it is, it's Peter Jackson, so every episode is 3 hours.
yeah, I saw it was like 9 hours, and I was expecting a movie. Isn't this part one, too?
Three of them are, no, it's just three parts, and they're all,
okay.
But man, it's good. It's also, because you'll definitely like it, because it's just, you're seeing them just work together. And you feel like you're like in the room with them. It's awesome. And then you're also at the same time seeing them like kind of break up. It's so cool. Right. It's so cool. It's like, man, you really get to know them as people just by watching them hanging out. And you're just like, oh, it's so good. Anyway, Yellow Submarine movie should never have happened. But yeah, this was such an industry trend at the time doing motion capture, is that in the 2000s, in the three nominees for Best Animated Feature in 2006, two of the nominees are motion capture films, and one of them is not without motion capture, which is Cars. Disney Pictures Cars. And even to the point
– And this the was other one was Monster House and Happy Feet.
God, I freaking hate that stupid movie. Oh, my gosh. There's so many when I hear Happy Feet, I get, like, legit angry. I hate that movie so much. And the amount of people were like, Brett, when are you guys going to do a Happy Feet episode? Okay, you know what? This is not a joke. I made a list of other topics. I'm going to pull them up right now that I would rather talk about, or that we will talk about before we ever get to a Happy Feet episode. Are you ready, folks? Here we go.
Yeah.
9/11. Enron. Who we voted for in the 2020 election. What are some other topics that I would rather talk about than Happy Feet? Going into both of our sexual pasts in complete detail. You're going to get that before you're getting Happy Feet, people.
Yeah, that's a special episode. That's the XXX Most Extreme Podcast.
Yes, that's going to be on our... on our OnlyFans. Yeah, it's to the point that, like, I freaking hate that movie. That's how you better... You're going to get those episodes before you get Happy Feet.
Wow. So no Happy Feet. No Happy Feet episode soon.
You can do it on your own, sir.
I will just record by myself and talk about Happy Feet.
We'll lock you in a room. The end credits of Ratatouille actually at the end has a stamp at the end that says 100% pure animation, no motion capture, because there was much motion capture going on in the time. Yeah, it's just so big. So going back, I guess, to the Polar Express, let's talk about the Polar Express as a movie. Mm-hmm. This movie is what we're talking about. We talked about Tom Hanks kind of being the one to kind of take it all. This was a weird time in his and I watched the behind the scenes for this, and I don't think Tom Hanks is doing a bad performance at all in this movie. I think he's really giving it his all. I think he's a phenomenal actor, and this was definitely a weird time in his career too, in 2004, where he did The Lady Killers, which is a movie with the Coen brothers, and it's weird. It's a weird movie. It's definitely one of their it's not that great, especially cuz they had just come off of like Oh Brother Art Thou, which is personally my favorite movie that they've made. And then he also starred in The Terminal, which Steven Spielberg, where he plays like an Eastern European guy from a fictional country. I love that movie. I know a lot of people think it's pretty cheesy, but I think The Terminal is pretty great.
Yeah, I remember like a lot of posts about it recently, like in, you know, like the film Instagrams or whatever. But I remember seeing it, part of it.
Yeah, and then he does this. So he's kind of really just trying to prove himself as a character actor more than anything, because he had been such a leading man for so long with, you know, Forrest Gump as a big example, or Philadelphia, or Castaway. And so kind of being able to prove himself as like, no, I can play like different weird characters. It's sort of the same with like Cloud Atlas.
Right.
Yeah. Which is with the Wachowskis. Which I saw in an interview recently that he said that's one of his favorite performances he's ever given. Which is, I feel like nobody watched Cloud Atlas. I've never seen it.
Remember what that is about?
Well, it's a Wachowski film, so you can kind of guess that it's going to be.
I remember. What was it? Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah,
I remember that one.
that did Speed Racer, that did a bunch of stuff. But mm-hmm. yeah, there it's a weird. And now it feels like Tom Hanks has kind of found that ground where he's kind of the star of every movie your dad likes, you know, all the memes
yeah.
of like, it's World War II and he's a captain or, you know, something like that. Yeah. He did do the movie Finch, which I saw and it was pretty good.
That was my review. Yeah. With, it was pretty good. Ansel Elgort, I think is the name.
No. It's
or which one?
It's him and a robot and a dog going through like a post-apocalyptic San Francisco. So,
Ooh, okay.
Look out. Caleb Landry Jones is in the movie from Get Out.
Is that the, which one's that one?
He plays the brother who's like playing with the fiddle. He plays the robot. Anyway, moving on to talk about the Polar Express. I just think it's just not a good Christmas movie, nor does it is a good film. I don't know. Peter Travers, mm-hmm. who's a great film critic of the Rolling Stone, gave this film 1 out of 4 stars, and he called it a failed and lifeless experiment in which everything goes wrong. Yeah, really, the film doesn't have any soul to it, even though it acts like it does. And that's the problem I have with it, is that it acts like it's got this huge, big meaning that, like, it's mm-hmm. meaning all these big things. And truly, I hate it. It's just, like, mm-hmm. just believe in Santa and you'll get presents.
And especially, like, it's just the movie, like, tries to be charming a lot and it doesn't really hit in like where it matters and stuff. And especially like, I think what there's 2 musical sequences. And
it's not even a musical, but they're really like
great. there's the hot chocolate and,
right.
And the believing song.
You mean the end credit song, the Josh Groban thing? I also hate Josh Groban. I'm really sorry. But
it just has one good everything song that you don't like about Christmas.
It really is. It's because it's just like my problem with it is that it's doing the thing that I hate, where it's like it's an incredibly shallow message of a movie that, and it's mm-hmm. forcefully putting all these emotional scenes and sappy music in it, and it's like slapping you in the face like, are you crying? Are you crying? You need to be crying. Are you crying right now? Because this is really emotional. And I mm-hmm. hate that because it feels so forced and manipulative. Yeah. It feels like it's
right. And none of the characters like are likable really, because you have the little kid who like kind of annoying. And it's just hard to get like, he's just very straight, like, straight man kind of thing, where he's not like the funny character or anything like that. He has like just no personality. And then you have like all the other characters, the really annoying kid, the girl that looks like ASAP Rocky, one of my friends told me.
You're talking about the girl. I thought you were talking about the nerdy kid who was like, hey kid.
No. Yes. Well, I was talking about him before. Yes. But, just
girl looks like ASAP Rocky.
Also,
have I ever told you that I ever ran into ASAP Rocky at a coffee shop?
At a coffee shop? Where?
In Los Angeles. Yeah. It was, I have this picture of it. I saw him in his car. That's all it was. Is that like, I went to a coffee shop in Beverly Hills, got into my car and started driving. And then I noticed that the person who was trying to take my parking spot had a really nice car. And I was like, ooh, who's that? And then we looked and it was ASAP Rocky.
Oh, wow. So you gave your spot to ASAP Rocky.
So if you're listening, ASAP, just let us know. What did you get? Are you a latte guy or do you go for more just like a cold brew? Let us know. Email us.
I feel like ASAP owes you one, you know. Free parking.
He does. Space. I gave him that parking spot. It's hard in Los Angeles. Anyway, we were talking about with the know-it-all guy.
Mm-hmm. Who? Oh yes. So I don't know if you have seen who plays him in real life.
But yeah, they look the same.
They look the exact same. It's not even a joke. It's the exact same person. But yeah, the memes, the Astro.
All the memes of like. Yeah, like, you like Brockhampton? All those.
I love how he says lines, because they just hit you in that spot where you are so annoyed.
But it's like, why is this in here, you know?
Yes.
But like, and I watch movies like Elf, which I know you haven't seen, but I love it not only just because it's a great fish out of water story, mm-hmm. but like it, the whole point of it is like the meaning of Christmas is like compassion and caring for others and caring for your family and caring for your coworkers mm-hmm. and caring and like being having friends. And this movie is like, no, I want toys. Like the whole point of it is like toys, commercialism, capitalism.
It's
like it's a great
the kid too has this way of speaking that is just very underwhelming. And it's so interesting that in the original story, the kid already was into Christmas and he just goes on like a magical Christmas adventure. But in this movie, he is a pessimist and like doesn't really talk much. And you just, his story arc is that he just believes in Christmas, which he already had in the original story. So, like, I could see them trying to stretch this story out instead of just making it its own thing that, you know, has other elements. Because I feel like this kind of story would be taken, well, like could be adapted into something a little more interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. This is another thank you to Griffin Newman, but like I don't know if you knew, but they were at one point trying to make Tom Hanks also be the voice of the young child. And yes, they realized that was a bad idea pretty early on.
I'm so glad. I'm glad that they didn't try to have him voice the girl singing.
Oh, right.
Because that would be not great.
But they did use his voice only for the very first teaser, so it's so funny because it's just the scene of the conductor being like, "Well, you coming?" And then he's like, "Tom Hanks is a little boy." Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Well, to the North Pole, of course. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, that's the other thing too, is that wow. I feel like that character of like the conductor is awful mm-hmm. because he's not nice to the children at all. He hates them. He's just like
his like, whole deal is ticket? Just we got to get there on time. That's yeah. really it.
And then, yeah, it's just like, what is the point of this? I don't understand it. That's the only one that yeah. actually kind of looks like Tom Hanks. Like the other ones don't. Well, we never see the dad. We just hear his voice. So.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just Santa Claus. So who doesn't right. really look like Tom Hanks either.
Oh, I'm Santa. Which that can be anybody. But yeah, there's, the 2000s actually has good Christmas movies, like we mentioned Elf, but like mm-hmm. I don't love the Jim Carrey's in a lot of Christmas movies. I don't love the Grinch Stole Christmas that he made. I think it's pretty terrible, but it's still kind of entertaining, especially just watching it from like a practicality point. Like, man, he had to go like through 8 hours of makeup just to put on all that Grinch stuff.
I mean, it's way better than that movie that came out with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, really? I haven't seen version. That one.
Yes.
Is it bad?
Well, it's just, you know, Illumination Studios in the vein of all the kind of direct, just translation Dr. Seuss novels
sure.
into kind of kids' films.
Right. I'm actually a surprised defender of Illumination. I think they get a lot of bad rep. I don't think their movies are great, but I think it's more like that studio that I'm kind of waiting. I want them to make their Spider-Verse, if that makes sense, where like Sony Pictures is always the studio that I was like, they're kind of the lame studio. They make the Open Season mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then they make Spider-Verse and you're like, holy crap. And I'm right. waiting for Illumination to come out with their version of that. Or yeah. here, I'll make it. I'll direct it.
Well, I would love to make an animated movie. Just Illumination gets, I think, a lot of like hate because they do a lot of the very commercial stuff.
Only. Right. Kind their of big like, problem is.
Yeah. Which is not like what DreamWorks was about or kind of, obviously what Disney is. So it's just this kind of like, I think some people see it as a great value brand of other kids like companies, you know, cause it's sure. just like not Disney and not something else.
Right. Their big problem is that the movie is only half of what they're doing. Like so much of mm-hmm. it is just like, that's only 50% of what you're getting. Cause there's they do so hard on the marketing. They go so hard on like the merchandising, everything. Like the Minions is a great example where it's like mm-hmm. they've made how many movies, and it's like, but they're just like merchandise alone of the Minions is like made more than any Universal movie period.
Yes, so
that's just kind of
they're clearly not suffering.
No, the just the you know the overconsumption of it all is a big thing. Anyway, Illumination, call me. I want to make a movie with you. I don't know about you, Alejandro, but one day I would love to make an animated movie. I know nothing about it, but I love the art form, and I would love to try it.
Yeah, no, I was talking to one of my animation friends, and I would really like to learn to like learn a lot about it, and then probably direct one. But it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot of technical working. You know, I hate computers, but I have to work with them.
That's true. I also hate computers. I don't hate them as much as some people, but I definitely
it's just they go wrong whenever you need them not to go wrong.
Right.
Usually.
Well,
which
I do.
We've had in this podcast.
Oh, all the time. Yeah. For those who want to know the behind the scenes of this show, is that something goes wrong probably every episode. That's just how technology works. But that's also just filmmaking in general. I did a shoot recently on my job where it was like, we were told, like, oh, don't worry, nothing's going to happen. And of course, the day we show up, they're like, we're hearing like drills go off and like they're doing construction in the building. Just hearing like, doo, doo, or like, we can't use any of the audio. Like, just that's life. L'chaim. But yeah, I do want to talk a little bit about just animation during this time period, specifically in the early 2000s, which we've talked about a bunch, but I really want to talk about it because where Polar Express kind of fits in. Because pretty much every decade in animation, I'm a huge animation nerd, is very much trying to prove that it's not the previous generation. And that happens so much of the time. When we think about it in the 90s, like the Disney Renaissance movies are trying to prove that they can be like these big dramatic epic films that are not Snow White, that they're not Cinderella, and that they can be, you know, bigger, they can be darker, they can be bolder. And then the 2000s is having that too. And the big example of that is Pixar is proving to people on and on and on through the entire 2000s and pretty much up to this whole point is that animated movies are not just for kids, that they're for adults as well. And the best example of this statement is a movie that comes out the same month as Polar Express is The Incredibles, which is that's their big bold statement of we don't make kids movies, we make movies for everyone.
Exactly. And you see the straight difference right then and there.
Right. And it's literally them saying, watching them as a studio, sitting around and going, we've gotten too complacent. We have to make something that is completely different or else we're not going to be original or creative anymore. We have to make something different. So they get Brad Bird and they make The Incredibles. And it is arguably their best movie.
Right.
I don't know if it's my favorite, it might be their best.
I think it's like one of the better written ones. Which is saying a lot because they're all really tight and very, very compact.
I would argue that The Incredibles might be one of the most important films to ever come out ever. Like, it changed everything.
It's definitely, like, the best superhero, like, movie that has been made in this, like, century.
Yeah, I would argue the same thing because it's one of those things where a lot of people argue with The Incredibles. We probably have to do an episode on it, but, like, could have just been in live action. And I'm like, but that you're forgetting, you're not understanding the whole point. Like, animation is not a genre, it is an art form. Like, like they chose to do this on purpose as animated. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what's crazy about like when they're doing live action versions, because they're taking something that was not meant to be live action and like completely turning it. And I don't know how like good this film would have been if it was just like maybe traditional animation or you know, CGI and like with like, you know, a more depth script, a script with a little more depth, you know.
Were we talking about the Polar Express?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought we were talking about The Incredibles. I'm like, The Incredibles is a very deep movie.
Yeah. I was just
no, but I agree with you. I think at one point the director said that the writer of the novel or the children's book was like, I don't want it to be animated, and so they were like, how can we get around that?
That was in his contract that he didn't want it to be animated.
Right.
And interesting thing, the book actually came out the same year that Robert Zemeckis' debut film came out.
I Want to Hold Your Hand?
I believe, yeah.
Another Beatles movie.
It was, yes, I think it is. Let me check. I'll come back to that.
Okay.
But yeah.
I believe it is I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah.
The other things I'm trying to talk about sort of the trends of animation is that DreamWorks in the 2000s has the Shrek 2s, all their stuff, and they're trying to basically prove to the industry that animation can be a – can grab big popular actors on a project and it can be just as bankable as putting in something live action. So we look at something like Madagascar, which has a huge cast, or the Shrek movies have a huge cast, and they are like, this is the first time we're seeing like live, like they're going on to like Jay Leno or something to promote an animated movie that they did a voice of. Like, this is becoming like their projects that they would be doing rather than like a live action. And that's another important thing that we've talked about with B movie and Shrek and things like that. And then Disney Animation around this time is probably the worst critical decade they've ever had since the 1970s. They had just ended the Disney Renaissance, and now all they're doing is basically just greenlighting projects that have been shelved for many years. So that's Treasure Planet, that's Home on the Range. I remember
one of their movies from this time, Home on the Range, yes. I used to also like that movie, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I believe Home on the Range is a very short movie. I think it's like, is it 60 minutes? It's an hour and 16 minutes. It's very short. Hour and 16 minutes. It's probably the worst.
And the film that came out when this book came out was Back to the Future.
Oh, Back to the Future.
To the Future and this book came out at the same time.
Gotcha. Nickelodeon at the same time is kind of killing it with their franchises around this time. Notably, the same month that this comes out is the SpongeBob SquarePants movie, which makes bank. Mm. And it's supposed to technically be the closure of the whole series, but then we know how that ended up. And now we still have SpongeBob all the time.
Now we have two more movies.
Right.
Yes.
And especially,
did they come out already? I'm not sure.
Yes. One of them has Antonio Banderas in it, which we just talked about. And almost every major studio around this time is also trying to find their version of a Pixar. So we've talked about like Sony Pictures Animation, which makes like Open Season and Surf's Up. They kind of try to do their own type of version of all this.
Surprisingly, I've heard holds up pretty well.
Which one? Surf's Up.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's Open Season is not good, but it's animation.
Right. It's trying to be The Endless Summer.
Right.
Which is the joke.
yeah,
Blue Sky Animation
was another one. Yeah. Blue Sky.
Yeah, I was gonna mention Blue Sky because they have the Ice Ages of this time. Like every studio is like, we got to have our animation studio, so they all kind of try to make their own versions of this. But then you've got like these mini hits that are coming out of like Japan with Studio Ghibli, and they make like Spirited Away, and then you have Aardman, which is like, yeah, we're gonna do a first ever fully claymation movie, and they make Chicken Run, and it's a classic.
Yes, great movie.
So, yeah, it's very much – this is the decade that was the first time I think moviegoers started to grasp that the concept of animation is an art form, not a genre. And we still have a lot of ways to go. I know a lot of my friends to this day who are my age even who don't consider that. They think animation is just for children. But I think more and more we're getting things like Arcane or Spider-Verse or something, or like, you know, Ghibli and anime and all this stuff that I feel like – we're just getting better and better at like people understanding, no, it's an art form, it's not a genre.
Right. I mean, I think it's like how superhero movies, when they were first coming out, you know, before like Spider-Man, the original, they were very, you know, cheesy, also, you know, made for kids, was seen as this, oh, you don't have to take this seriously. But then just Marvel was able to change everyone's perspective on that, basically. By themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And the Batman Begins and things like that too.
Right, right. And so yeah, so like animation doesn't have to just be this kind of like, it's just usually always like the movies are made for very wide audiences. You don't really see like a very niche animation movie, I don't think, like unless, you know, it's like a kind of an indie thing.
Right. Well, the one I was going to mention that was all CG, that wasn't motion cap, which was semi motion capture, I guess, that is very much saying animation is an art form, not a genre, is Rango, which I love. And that is a great movie and a great example, and it won an Oscar.
Yes.
And it's very much an example of, like, no, we're not making a kid's movie. We're mm-hmm. making a movie for everybody, and it is mm-hmm. a Western, and it is this. And we're taking everything to the extremes of, like,
which
everything.
Which is a great – it's a great Western, just like a Western in general.
Mm-hmm. I really like how they shot that movie, and it's not like motion capture like the Polar Express, but it's basically they shot the whole movie in live action in a soundstage, and then they just used the voices and the acting, and then the animators acted out what they were doing, and they used the voices for it. And so everyone's doing all the voice acting together. So like Isla Fisher and Johnny Depp are like in the same room together doing their scenes, and then so they get it all. It's very different, and I think more people should do it.
It just
anyway,
you get
Polar
that
Express
factor, yeah.
I mean, talking about like there was a ton of stuff that they were doing with kind of like promoting the, as we said before, like the big thing is that like the Polar Express kind of wasn't just a movie. Of course, they were trying to pull out so much stuff.
Yeah, which is when the video game comes in, the Polar Express video game, which I have a screenshot here in our notes of one of the scenes in it, and it's just horrifying. It's the little kid and the little girl with very stiff poses, and their arms are like blended into their like kind of hips because the render's not right. Yeah.
Yeah. If you thought the movie wasn't creepy enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Then like this is just on another level. It was like basically like some of the notable things was there was a boss fight against a giant marionette puppet of Scrooge, and you just kind of just throw snowballs at him.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. So funny.
And I don't know who. I think it's just random voices, but I think in the real movie, Tom Hanks also voices the puppet. I think the Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, so Tom Probably. Hanks has his brother Jim Hanks, who does all of his voiceover stuff for him. So, like, even like with the Woody like toys and video games for Toy mm-hmm. Story, his brother does it because he's a sound alike, mm-hmm. and he's not doing it out of like I don't want to do it. Well, maybe he is, but he's also like I wanted to give my brother some jobs.
That is a great brother. Yeah, I wish I could get a job for like sounding like somebody for my one of my family members.
Yeah, but the funny thing we should mention is that the boss fight against a giant marionette puppet of Ebenezer Scrooge, where you win by throwing snowballs at him, is way before they did Christmas Carol. But it kind of looks like the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol Scrooge, so it's like they right. were like planting that seed ahead of time.
Yeah, it has that same like design that he has in the movie. But yeah, there's also a coal shoveling dance rhythm section. Which yeah. I don't know how you combine those two.
It's the two like conductors of the plane, those two like bumbling idiots, and it's mm-hmm. like you like shovel coal with them to like a dancing song. It's very mm-hmm. weird.
Which in the movie, it's very interesting that they are just there randomly and they never show up ever again throughout the movie.
Yeah. I think they might have had a bigger role in like a deleted scene or something. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I don't know how much they cut out of this for either just money purposes or something else.
Right.
But yeah, do you want to talk about this
Oh,
part?
I did see one review on Google of this. It was 1 star. Give me back my kids. They are so addicted to this game and they won't stop playing.
Oof, those kids are far gone by now.
It might have been a meme, for all I know.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I did mention there was food. As all movies do, they always had, like, so there was a Polar Express Kraft macaroni and cheese train collector set you could get.
Yes, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a giant box of Kraft mac and cheese that comes with a train.
Right.
And a little stand.
We also get... Yeah, I guess they're on eBay somewhere. Post Cereal makes the Polar Express Cereal Limited Edition with artificially flavored cocoa cereal with marshmallow bits. I was like, if it doesn't taste like hot chocolate, what is the point? Like, it's basically just like cocoa puffs, but with like Lucky Charms put into it.
Yeah.
So it's got to be the sugariest cereal ever.
Do you have
ever.
To drink it with like chocolate milk?
Ooh, good question. Mm. It's probably less like the Cocoa Puffs thing or the Cocoa Pebbles thing where, like, the chocolate just makes it turn into chocolate milk.
Right, right.
No, you put in steaming hot chocolate, boiling hot. I can barely eat it. Lots of toy trains that they put into this movie. The big thing is, and they're still doing to this day, and there's places all around the country who are doing this, which is like the Polar Express experiences.
Yeah, I've seen those. Like, I've seen ads for those, like, all these years.
Yeah, all around the country.
But I wasn't aware it was so popular. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So I'm finding one here on the North Carolina Transportation Museum.org, and it's like, inspired by the hit movie hit. Well, that's subjective. This holiday favorite comes to life, and it's essentially like the one of these, like, some of these train companies have, like, put together, like, an old steam train. It's probably actually not run by steam, complete with hot chocolate and cookies served board a train. Passengers are entertained by reading of the classic book, The Polar Express. Upon arrival at the North Pole, passengers deboard to watch Santa present the first gift of Christmas. Experience of enjoy the caroling and holiday entertainment. Children of all ages are encouraged to wear pajamas for the ride and join in. Required. You must wear pajamas. Oh, I thought it was going to be the more of an experience like, well, we're going to kidnap your children in the middle of the night and make them come on a train and take them to the North Pole when you're asleep.
Yeah, I don't know how well that would do. I wonder, you know.
I would have loved it.
Like, what – I guess they don't have a lot of movies to copy, like, train movies, you know. There's not a lot of train movies. So Polar Express is, like, the only thing that they can do.
And, I mean, I totally get the idea of doing a festive Christmas-themed event, and it would be nice. And I think, you know, there's a steam-powered train. Sounds like a lot of fun, but I don't know if I would want, like – do I get to meet a creepy homeless man on top? Do I get to climb? Do we get to go down – do we get to go
do
on, like, a roller coaster ride?
Do I get taken to the front of the train and then, you know, cause the train to crash?
Yeah. Right. Do we get to like go on ice with this thing? Go crazy. In 2021, the Cine concert, a giant train comes in, like, doing.
It's a dancer in a giant train costume. Yes.
Yeah, in 2021, the Cine Concerts Company, in partnership with Warner Brothers Consumer Products, and presented the Polar Express in concert, bringing a worldwide symphony hall showings of the movie, backed by a live symphony orchestra and choir. Mm. And my question is, it's 2021, they're doing this now for Christmas. Do people consider it a classic this many years later? I'm very curious. If you do, email us at MissingCopPodcast. It's not even a joke. I want to know. Or DM me. Like, do you consider this movie to be a classic? Because I am skeptical.
Yeah, it's old enough to where, like, it could be considered, you know, a classic because it's time has passed. But I don't know about the actual movie. I don't really, like, hear anyone talk about Polar Express. You know, like, as if, like, how somebody talks about Elf, you know?
That's a good way of putting it. I love Elf, though, and there is a musical of that, too. Yeah, man,
Elf
Polar Express is Elf on Ice. So what we're saying is, guys, coming next Christmas is Most Extreme Podcast on Ice.
On Ice, yes.
It'll be fun. It'll be such an experience. And everyone gets a prize. And what will happen is both of us will tell them that it is in transit. And so that's the big surprise.
It's going to come over, like, on the
Polar
Express.
Hey, you get a prize.
Yes.
Exactly. We're both taking steam engine classes right now. Anyway.
All right. Should we move to the box office?
Let's talk some box office.
All right. Well, this came out in November of 2000. What year was this? 2004.
Well,
I don't know.
There's kind of two reasons for that, which the number one reason is, one, the trailers for this movie were coming out in 2003 around Christmas time, because if you announce a Christmas movie in, like, July or show the trailers, nobody's going to care. So they've been doing trailers for this for a really long time. And also, in terms of how most Christmas movies make money, is by December 25th, after by December 26th, nobody's going to go see a Christmas movie in theaters. Christmas is over. They're not going to make any money. So they always put them out pretty early on after Halloween so that you get enough ready for it. So that's where you can make that extra dough.
Yeah, that's why you have the them coming out in November and lasting until the next month, which is
right. So, what are some other movies that came out?
So, this movie was actually number three for that month, and the number two was actually a former topic, National Treasure.
Oh, that's right.
The first one beat it, and it came out just 9 days after Polar Express. Would you consider National Treasure a classic?
Personally, yes, but I don't think most people would. I think it's great. That's right, because it came out the same day as SpongeBob SquarePants the movie.
Yes, which is number four. So it actually Polar Express beat the SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
That makes a little bit more sense, but it still made a ton of money. And then number one is
The Incredibles. Yes,
The Incredibles. That makes sense because that just blows up. That blows up the money. It blows up the critic wise. Yeah, everyone's like, this is like one of those movies where you've got to see it. Yeah,
right. And I mean, except for the ones we just talked about, like everything else is pretty like dead. It's just like Bridget Jones.
Really?
Ugh. Bad Education. I don't know if you remember that movie.
Is that part Alexander. Of like the Bad Santa stuff?
That's the Bad Santa movies, but the Bad Education ones is, I think it's Cameron. What's her name?
Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz, yes. And I don't know if Seth Rogen was in those.
I thought you were talking about there's a movie from 2019 called Bad Education with Hugh Jackman.
This is a different one.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes. But yeah.
Cool.
Other than the ones we talked about, not a great time, I don't think.
Yeah, the summer was a bitter time for that time of movies.
Yes, but we got blessed with the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. So I guess it made it all right.
Amen.
But yeah, the Polar Express, like we said, I guess people consider it a classic and it gets re-released every Christmas season.
I was just looking at my local theater and I was like, oh, they're doing showings. Yeah,
exactly. They have a 3D version of the IMAX, aside from the like standard traditional 35 millimeter. And, it's generated from the same CGI models used for the standard version. So I don't know, like, how that works.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It was, I remember the time there was, like, not that much. It was before the IMAX stuff started happening.
Right. It was pretty rare if you got an IMAX movie back in the day. Now everything has an IMAX release. But I the only shot I can think of that would be really cool in IMAX 3D is the very first revealing of, like, the smoke kind of clears and you see the front of the train and how long it is. That would be really cool in IMAX 3D. But that's only one shot. It's like the rest of it, like, I don't really care.
It's like you remember that movie Monsters vs. Aliens? It was with Seth Rogen and
as, like, the Blob.
As the Blob, yes. And that movie, this first, I think it's one of its first shots. It's just a little ping pong ball, like, back and forth.
Yeah.
And it, like, goes past the screen.
It's
but
so obvious.
The rest of it is, like, a normal, like, animated kids movie, which is so funny that I saw it in IMAX 3D. And I remember watching that. I was like, whoa. And then that was the only shot. do you want to talk about the Orlando?
Sure. So the other big thing that happened is in 2007 that SeaWorld Orlando debuted the Polar Express Experience, which is a motion simulator ride based off of the film. And so what they did is the attraction that they have there – it's called Wild Arctic, which is a simulator where you're going to the North Pole. And so they just kind of, in the Christmas season, took out that old film and put in the Polar Express Experience. Now, it is not a new ride. not a new film development. It's literally just like clips from the movie that like totally feel like a ride, like especially the POV shots of like them going like down a hill on the tracks and going up and like all that stuff that feels like, oh, I'm on a ride. So they just put that to a motion simulator. That's it. But the building was housing around it was themed to being an old railroad station, and the ride vehicles were painted to resemble a Polar Express passenger cars. The plot of the ride is just like, you're going to the North Pole. Because when you get off, you get to see polar bears. The guests, you could feel like the locomotion, there's like steam and stuff. And they did this pretty much every Christmas season until 2015 when they stopped doing it. And then they have kept the Wild Arctic attraction pretty much year round. But the big difference is that they, that 4D film of they have like the Polar Express experience is there's this company called Simex Iwerks, which is, they kind of do it. They have it at the North Carolina Zoo. They do it all over the world where they'll do like Ice Age, the 4D experience. And you're like, what?
Right.
And it's just clips from a movie. And then they put like a simulator to it, go along with it with like the smells and the water effects and things like that. And so they do that with like, and they put them all over. They do it at Dollywood. They have it at Warner Brothers Movie World in Australia, Cincinnati Zoo, the Botanical Gardens everywhere. So very much that kind of thing. They just did it for, they have one for It, the 4D experience, which sounds terrifying. 4D.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they do the Shrek one, the Shrek 4D experience?
I don't know. That one's specifically made just for Universal. These are more just like, hey, we have a movie. You want to make something out of it? So what I'm saying is if the MXP on ice doesn't work, then we have MXP 4D. The 4D
experience, yes.
Right. So you can have, we start in the airplane hangar and then we go out. Oh, man. This could be so much fun. Anyway, The Polar Express, what a film. What a time. Yes. Cheesiness. What? And we got, you know, it's the Christmas season, of course.
Mm-hmm.
This is our last episode of the year. I'm very, happy new year as well, everybody.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts you want to end on?
Just Steven Tyler Elf, and that's it.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And
Steven Tyler's,
I'm so glad
movie.
There wasn't a Josh Groban Elf, because I don't know if I could have handled that, but yes, just Steven Tyler Elf.
Steven Tyler Elf.
And if you don't know what I'm Steven talking about, Tyler, just watch the movie.
Look it up.
Yes.
Or save yourself some time and just look it up, because Steven Tyler is in this movie. And I like Steven Tyler. I like Aerosmith a lot. I think he's really talented. Out of all the like replacement judges on American Idol, he was my favorite. I feel like J-Lo was okay and people like that, but I think he had the most like charisma. So shout out Steven Tyler. You have your own ride, so that makes you pretty cool.
he needs but to get so his own 4D Fallon, experience, so. Too.
Yeah, but if Jimmy Fallon has his own ride, so that's like, what? I don't know if that counts. Well, maybe we'll have our own ride with MXP 4D coming next year with Simex Iwerks. We're going to work with them. We got a... we're going to have the ping pong paddles ready at the screen.
We're going to simulate us having technical problems the whole time.
Yeah. All the water effects are just going to be us spitting on the mic. Because we've been doing so many hours of the show. But yeah, any final thoughts you want to end on? Besides Steven Tyler Elf?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Just, it was a movie that I watched because I liked it a lot as a kid. And now seeing it, it's just, okay, I can see what they were doing. And, it, you know, the magic's a bit gone, and I can't really hear the ringing bells anymore. But, I don't know, maybe I'll like Elf. I'm definitely going to watch Elf this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be the year I watch Elf. Yes.
It's my favorite, that Charlie Brown Christmas. There's a bunch of others. We didn't talk about Unaccompanied Minors. Which is one that's pretty funny.
I've seen that one.
That one has like the main guy from Everybody Hates Chris. It's basically just about like kids who are like traveling solo in the airports, which is called Unaccompanied Minor. And then they all get stuck in an airport together because it's snowing over Christmas. And so they cause havoc. It's quite fun.
So it's like the Terminal, but Christmas version.
Right, and it's all these kids who are like, well, I guess we're our family together.
Right.
Like, that's the idea. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. And honestly, have a happy holidays from me and, well, I guess I'm speaking for Alejandro, but happy holidays.
Happy holidays,
and
everybody.
And Merry Christmas.
Yes. Spend time with those you love this season.
Spend time with those you love, and, and
follow
eat a lot of food
on
us. And
yes.
Follow, you know what, you know how you can love is by following us on Most Extreme Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And you can try to find Dune, which will hopefully be on HBO Max. You can snuggle up and watch that, or you can just listen to us during the Christmas season. And if you have any questions, I am really curious if you think this movie is a classic or not. So please reach out to us. We will see you next year.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
Happy holidays.